Fine. Tomorrow at school, I'll tell everybody how much fun I had here, and I'll even say he's a solid hang.
No. We want pictures from your private online accounts posted, giving him a piggyback ride, hashtag best friends, hashtag teen life.
Hashtag teen life?
What part of hashtag teen life do you not understand?
Right, welcome back, everybody. It's the Dom and Colin podcast. I am Colin, here with you once again. No Dom again this week, although fingers crossed, I'm hoping that's the last time I'm going to be saying that. He has a microphone that is set to arrive, I believe, tomorrow at the time of this recording. But thankfully, I have a very capable fill-in host with me in his place once again. Very excited to have back on the podcast one of our good friends of the show at this point. Welcome, Austin Trupp. Austin, how are you doing?
I am doing great, Colin. I am slightly worse off for not having seen you in New York last week, but I'm living my my newfound life with free time.
Yeah, I am substantially worse off for not seeing you and everyone else in New York last week as well. I really wish I could have made it. Just couldn't work out for me this time, but I'm sure I will hopefully do my best to be at wherever the next one is. But Austin, you were there, and Dom was actually there. Can you confirm for the audience that Dom is at least still alive?
Dom is alive. He locked us all out of the bathroom. So, I mean, you know, his problems on the podcast aside, Dom is just making waves around the scene. And you were also still, you had to feel good that you were still featured in the Sarah Know-It-Alls blog.
Oh, I swear I got more shout outs in the one that I wasn't at the event for than any of the recaps where I was actually there. But, in reading that blog, I had heard that someone had locked the bathroom door and this group of 12 people who were all sharing the bathroom, were locked out of it for like 8 hours or whatever. It wasn't until reading that blog that I found out it was Dom, which I like cried laughing reading that Dom was the one, who did that, because I cannot, all I can do is mentally picture Dom and how bad he would feel doing that and knowing that like this entire group was mad at him and how he would like overreact to that.
Rumor has it that Dom was actually, he kept kind of going off to the side of it during the week. And the rumor is that he was kind of crying. He missed you. He missed talking to you. And he was going to the bathroom to kind of let that out. And that's when the lock happened. So it really is your fault, Colin.
All right. Now I am certain you were lying to me. Now I am positive this is all just fake news. But very glad that you and everyone else seemed to have a good time there. It was certainly a fun episode to listen to. But I want to ask you a little bit about something else you just mentioned. Austin, everyone at this point, I hope, knows you as the creator and host and editor and everything of Survivor Maryland, which just wrapped up a phenomenal All-Star season, and it's now the end of the Austin Trupp era after 5 seasons on Survivor Maryland. You seem to be enjoying not having that on your plate at this point, but what's life like kind of for you now, just mentally being at the point where you know there's no more Survivor Maryland in front of you?
It really is crazy, and I think I've mostly adjusted at this point, but I still find myself at times having nightmares that I have editing to finish, or feeling like, oh, I can't go to this event because I have to worry about editing. And I'm like learning to say yes to things. I'm relearning how to like handle watching TV and handle not doing anything and not having feeling like I have to get something done at all times. I mean, it's really been years since I've had that feeling. I'm also realizing that, you know, I definitely have more free time. I'm definitely more relaxed, but there's never enough free time. Like I thought there would be. I thought this like taking these hours out per day that I was doing editing would give me so much free time. But it turns out I just sleep more. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, you can finally get a healthy, normal amount of sleep and just still be a complete slave to the world. So congratulations on finally getting to that point. Yeah,
it's good overall, though. I won't complain. It is much more relaxing. I miss the rush of the All-Star season. It was a ton of fun and getting to interact with everybody from your podcast world. I mean, a lot of people really latched onto it from there, and getting to interact with fans in a real time basis on a season that really was so much fun was a blast. But I'm happy to be in this post Survivor era.
Yeah, well, let me put it out there. I know, obviously, regular listeners heard us talking up the season as it was airing and just Survivor Maryland in general. And that is definitely something that we obviously completely stand by now, having seen how it's all played out. And one thing that we had talked about is doing postseason podcasts. And frankly, the issue just became dominant at moving right as all of this was going on, like right as Maryland was wrapping up and David versus Goliath was beginning, right, just landed right on the time when Dom was going to be just out of commission for totally understandable reasons for so long. But that is still absolutely in the works. Once Dom does get back into the point where he is able to podcast regularly, we have a lot of Survivor Maryland content coming up for sure. So for anyone who still has yet to check out Survivor Maryland, I cannot truly give this a glowing enough recommendation. It is easily one of the best seasons of any form of Survivor in years at this point. And everyone that I know of who gave it a shot and rolled with it, I think would tell you nothing different from that. So, Austin, now that it's completely over and you're on air for the first time since then, a sincere congratulations on completing this incredible project and all the work that you put into this. It was a tremendous final result. And the entire online Survivor community, I think, is going to be eternally grateful, or at least as long as YouTube stays a thing, grateful.
Is YouTube not staying a thing?
I hope it will. No, I think YouTube's going to be one of the ones that endures. I think YouTube is going to be one that sticks around for a while. I think that little fledgling startup's going to make it.
Yeah, I thought you were breaking some news to me. I don't even know what to say. Thank you for that praise. Certainly people should check it out if they have not. I wish I could say the entire Survivor community online was grateful for it, but at least the niche we've created and carved out has been really fun to see develop, and in no small part thanks to you guys.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Happy to do anything we can do to get as many eyeballs on that as possible, and hopefully as some of these post-game interviews, and I know we're going to have you back on to talk through the whole thing from your point of view, it starts rolling out. I'm hoping that more people will be interested in checking that out. And the reason that I said as long as YouTube's a thing is because eternally it seemed a little hyperbolic even for me. So I was like, you know, as long as YouTube stays prominent, I feel like people are going to be finding this.
Well, the rare check of hyperbole from Colin Stone. I feel like I'm a part of history just witnessing that.
Well, I don't want to make it sound like I think people are going to be watching Survivor Maryland in like the year 2500.
They might be.
They could.
They might be.
Yeah, there could be a whole religion around Survivor Maryland by the year 2500. We
right,
don't know.
That's, yeah, Survivor will become its own cult, its own religion, and who knows at that point by five. They might be watching it like you just kind of press the air sideways and a screen pops up. Who knows?
Yeah.
Flying cars are apparently a thing now. Is that real?
It's terrifying. It's all, I'm not excited. I can't wait to be just like a grumpy old man complaining about all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Austin, one final thing before we get into the new David versus Goliath episode that we saw play out Wednesday night. I know that in your limited free time, something I've been very excited about, and for anyone who had the under 10 minutes on how long it takes Colin to bring up the genius, you're going to be cashing in the winning ticket this week. Austin, you have finally been diving into the genius. What has been your take thus far?
I have really loved it. It was one of the projects I absolutely wanted to get to as soon as I was done with editing Survivor. And I haven't actually wrapped up season one yet. I meant to the last couple days, and I just did not get a chance to. I personally can't do the Dom Harvey special of watching things on 3x speed, so it takes me an hour plus to watch every episode. But I'm taking my time with it. You can't multitask with it. Maybe you know Korean at this point, but I do not. I have to like actually focus and understand and go back and rewatch the game explanations. It makes me feel a little bit dumb, but I am very much enjoying it. I cannot believe how good the first season boot list is. Like, I cannot finally understand why people were so mad at me half the time about Survivor Maryland and how things go, because like you can't script people to go out better for the most part than how they went. So I'm enjoying it a lot. I'm making my way through it while also trying to, you know, pick up on all my other TV that I've missed over 3 years or 6 years or whatever also. So, but I'm excited to plow through it.
Yeah, I mean, it is something that certainly requires your full attention, unless you speak Korean, which I surely don't. I would say
someone at Know-It-Alls was shaming me for Katie from Survivor Maryland crushing the binge way harder than me, and I was like, she knows Korean. That's not fair. That's literally an unfair comparison. It could not be more unfair.
But I would say the genius is something that you as an English only speaker probably have to watch twice at least to fully comprehend. And I would further say, and I am 100% sub-podcasting or sub-tweeting, sub-podding Dom right now. If you're watching something at 3x speed, are you really watching that? I would very much question how much you can truly comprehend watching at that rate. I'm someone who I will occasionally put a podcast on like maybe 1.5 speed, but anything faster than that really gets to the point where I can understand each individual word as it's coming out, but how can you possibly be threading all of that together at that kind of rate?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he watches things at 3x speed, but even I can't even do like the 1.5 times because and I was thinking about it today. I feel like there's this race. There's so much content out there at this point in podcasts and TV and books, whatever those are. And there's like a race to get through it all because you feel like you're missing out if you don't. And I barely remember things that I listen to or watch on 1x speed. I was trying to remember my binge of Lost recently, and I feel like I remember 1/8 of that show. Like, I don't even remember most basic plot points. And so I can't even fathom the idea of trying to process all that while watching things on fast speed. You guys used to say, how can you listen to the Dom and Colin podcast not on 1x or on like 2x or 1.5x? And I cannot go anywhere past 1.
Well, for us, I think we both talk so quickly that that's more understandable. And I used to listen to more things at 1.2 or 1.5x, but frankly got like some new app for podcasts and couldn't figure it out and liked it more just on 1.0x, I guess, just 1x normal speed. But I feel like most people are probably on board with that at whatever speed they're listening to us have this useless discussion right now, Austin.
We're really talking about the things people want to hear, the speed of podcast listening. Let's talk about Survivor.
Austin, what did you think when you heard first about just this David and Goliath theme?
I feel like I don't have a reaction when the themes are announced at this point. I'm like, okay. I mean, we know it's going to happen. We know it's a part of the show at this point. I at least felt better about it. At least it's something understandable versus HHH or Triple H. That was just such a nonsense theme that I feel like everything above that is better. This is a theme. It's a talked about phrase. At least I've heard about it in my daily lexicon in life before. And I think that watching it through 2 episodes that I liked that it at least builds on existing power dynamics, or at least creates a power dynamic in players' minds where people actually see themselves as a Goliath or as a David, an underdog. And you see like Natalie shaming people for being like Davids, which I thought was really fun. And it doesn't – those dynamics and that perception doesn't dictate how they feel about themselves entirely. Like, they're still individual people within that. It's just one way of framing it. Whereas some of these themes with, like, again, Triple H, I'm going to go back to, but even Millennials versus Gen X, like, those ideas define everything about those people. And the show especially tried to define them entirely by that. Whereas you can't do that with David and Goliath. So I think it's fine. It's interesting. And it doesn't detract from the rest of characters and the rest of what's going on in the show.
Are you a David or are you a Goliath?
I don't know. I don't feel like I really fit in either category, which is probably why I was not cast for the season. I feel like in some ways I've struggled and persisted, but I've also had a fairly like sheltered life. And so I certainly wouldn't call myself like I wouldn't have a Pat Cusack. I heard you say his backstory last week and I was like really brutal and you didn't even mean to make the pun.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, God, the backstory. But I don't know. I don't feel like I fit strongly in either one. Did you say what you feel like you fit into?
No, I didn't. And I feel exactly like you do, Austin. I don't think I would feel like either one of them was the right tribe for me, whichever one they put me on.
I mean, that's the thing why it is in some ways ridiculous, because nobody walks around saying, oof, I am such a Goliath, or maybe you see yourself as an underdog. That part is reasonable, but
I think it takes like the pro wrestler, or like, I think the person who walks around saying, oh my God, I'm such a Goliath, is like the Jesse Godders from Big Brother type, that like these, their whole identity is being like an alpha.
Yeah. And I mean, you, when you hear the theme, I'm sure some people feel like, yeah, I really fit into those, and that's fine. But I certainly have not ever framed my life in that way.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to echo just like one complaint that I heard Antonio Mazzaro voice on the RHAP B&B, which is, it does kind of bother me, this theme, when we, in the premiere, cut to Jessica talking about what it means for her being a David, as if she'd ever thought about it in those terms before. It is not. And I feel like Millennials versus Gen X was another good example of where that kind of thing would happen constantly. Like, I remember in the premiere, we talked about Zeke, you know, framing himself as a millennial, as if that had ever crossed his mind as like a part of his actual identity, that he views any meaningful piece of himself in those terms.
Yeah, and I mean, it is definitely ridiculous when the show tries to tap into that. And I think the monologue from Jeff Ropes at the beginning of episode one was way over the top and way drawn out. And I think everybody had like a gag moment at that. But certainly they toned that down a lot for episode two, which is probably one of the reasons I loved it so much. And I think that it's not totally invalid to have people think about framing things in a different way. And that's what this does. It challenges whether you do see yourself as an underdog or somebody who's in power. And that's fine. But yeah, when you start saying, as I go in life as a David, or as I go in life through life as a Goliath, yeah, nobody is really actually thinking about things that way.
Yeah, as someone who has edited a few seasons of Survivor yourself, the edit of this season and the kind of balance to it is something that's been getting a lot of attention. And we are not in the edit zone, don't worry, it's nothing like that. But Austin, what are you thinking about the way that they've chosen to tell the story through this point?
Yeah, well, it's definitely been a big talking point, and I have definitely talked about it on Twitter. It's been a big thing for me. Everything feels fresh about the season to me, which is why I really loved it so far. I was going to say, just touching on the theme with the editing, that the only really big fear I have is that this could create an idea in the editor's minds or in the producer's minds or Jeff's mind that we have to force these underdog stories and really hammer home the underdogs taking over and thriving and whatever. And I think that's one of the weaknesses of the show sometimes, is boiling it down to being that simplistic. It's much more fun when you get an authentic or even like an unlikely underdog who you wouldn't ever see in that category, whereas someone who is presenting themselves as an underdog from day one is not as fun of a story, I think. I mean, this is just touching on Survivor Maryland, but you look at the sort of the underdogs that came out in season 4 and 5, both. I won't give names, but I think both of them people wouldn't have seen as underdogs beforehand, and the fact that they then became into that underdog role is actually more interesting. Like, I think if there's a Goliath who falls into this super underdog role, for instance, maybe Natalie, that would be a lot more fun than just seeing someone who says over and over that they are an underdog from day one, having that story that we already expect them to tell. If you know, does that make sense?
No, completely. And that was something that I touched on last week when I had Dominic Abate on the podcast. And I share that same concern that you do, about them feeling like they may need to force underdogs. And I frankly think we are potentially past that point, and that the David versus Goliath theme may have been a result of that already being their mindset. Like, my interpretation when I heard that that was going to be the theme is, okay, they have fallen in love with this kind of traditional winner arc, where they, you know, I think frankly Adam Klein and David Wright both made them feel like this was the way to go for the modern era of Survivor, whichever outcome that season ended up going. And I thought that the David versus Goliath theme was essentially an effort to ensure that at least half the time we're going to get some sort of underdog winner here.
Yeah, I'm worried about that. I will say, going back to your editing point, that I have more faith all of a sudden. I mean, maybe two episodes is too small of a sample size to go from that off, but I don't know. I think everybody has fallen in love with the season early so far, because it just doesn't feel like it's as formulaic. It seems like they've made a really concerted effort from the top down to show stories more, and not just show stories in these winter packages and these things we see every season where the big characters get the stories early. Pretty much everybody has been developed in some way, in some interesting often unique way compared to what we see from a lot of recent seasons. And especially for me, I think what seems so different is every duo or every relationship or every alliance has felt very organic, and it's been set up in a way that you understand why people connect or why they clash, and then why those dynamics end up impacting the numbers, rather than just seeing in the first 5 minutes, yeah, we have this alliance of five versus this alliance of four. I mean, it took almost till episode two, maybe a little bit in episode one, but for the most part, there weren't really any even talk of it's five versus four or it's six versus three or there's this group at all. You really just saw individual relationships, individual pairings. And I think that framing things from that perspective really allows us to bond with people early and to understand why events are happening in a way that isn't just strategy and numbers and chess. Because you've always said the game of Survivor is pretty simple in terms of numbers, but what makes it so lively and fun is having it based on the people.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. I'm just, at this point, a little reluctant to go too over the top, which I know is not characteristic of me generally, but I do feel like this kind of slower stretch of seasons that we've been in, frankly, 34, 35, and 36 for my money, after two episodes, I was really enjoying all of them. And it was mostly the post-merge that was a letdown, and a lot of the pre-merge in all three of those seasons was really fun and exciting and well-edited. And I don't want to take anything away from what a good job I think they're doing at this point, and I do want to leave the door open for that to continue to be the case, but I'm not ready to take it to the bank yet that this is going to continue to be a trend all season long. I'm still very nervous that we may roll up to the merge with a pretty clear idea of who the main characters are going to be on finale night.
Yeah, that's certainly possible, and I can, thinking back now on some of the last few seasons and the early episodes, there have been some creative editing things. I'm thinking of Triple H, where they had the whole scene of Chrissy choosing her alliance partner and setting up that relationship with Ben. So it's not unprecedented that we see these different styles of editing. I just think that it certainly is going to come down to how the season goes, what the outcomes are. But I do think there's a concerted effort to change things up. We've never seen things like the back and forth between the camps with the storm. I don't remember ever seeing that kind of showing the whole cast at once without dividing it up. I feel like one of the big things that's changed is it feels like the conversations are that they're showing between people are a little bit more full. Like they aren't cutting back and forth as much. I mean, certainly they still are. There's still like the whole Frankenbites thing, but the moments like Christian and Gabby in the sand was the big one. Or like Jeremy and Mike with Spears and with the idol in the pants. I went back and watched it again, and I feel like they're not cutting out these little moments between people that show how they bond. And that to me is it could be one of two things. It could be that it's just the cast and they have more little quirky fun moments like that, or it could be the editing. And it's hard to tell early on which it is. But either way, whether it's the cast or an actual editing shift, I think that at least gives us more potential for things to go differently. Again, like you said, it all is going to come down to how interesting the outcome is. I was bracing myself for a straightforward Lyrsa boot here just to continue the run of disappointment in the recent seasons, but it wasn't the case. And so I'm at least going to take it with an optimistic approach.
What do you think about the cast overall? Because that's exactly what I was going to say, is I think this is a cast that lends itself particularly well to those fun character moments and those kind of awkward pauses.
Yeah, it really might come down to that more than editing, and that they're taking advantage of that and seeing those and exploiting them. And I didn't really follow much preseason. I decided to go really hands off this year because, you know, I've had so much Survivor in my life recently that I think I just needed to take a breath and not know too much going in. And I think that's fun, actually. Like, I think, I don't know how, if you did the same, because you guys didn't do a preseason podcast, but I'm sure you looked at it a little bit at least. But
I did not. I listened to the first episode of First One Out.
For me, exactly.
Yeah, that was the extent of it.
Yeah, and so I just feel so much fresher going in without knowing them. So I don't know if that changes how I view it, but I think you can tell that the show is in love with the depth of the cast because they're giving so many people moments and airtime. And I mean, I have notes on like 75%. I have notes on everyone from the episode, but some more than others, but I think we've seen at least something to latch onto for each person, and they wouldn't do that if they weren't pleased with the cast. If there were Chelsea Walkers on the season, I still don't think that just because of a shift in editing that they're giving her a big moment. Like, they feel like these people are interesting, and I think we've had a lot of characters that are pretty maybe we've seen them before, but they're at least different versions of themselves. I was kind of down on Christian after the first episode compared to a lot of people. I thought maybe he was forcing it or playing up a character. But after two episodes, I'm in on Christian. I'm sold on that. We have not seen anyone like Queen Natalie in a long time, I think. And she is pleasure does not do it justice to say how much fun she is to watch. The diversity, having minorities on both tribes, not just like a token minority. I feel like there's diversity on each of the tribes. People like Davey, I don't know if they always get cast that much. Jeremy is great. Lyrsa too. Like, she's so much fun. Also, Elizabeth feels like old school casting, but like still has the new school game approach. There's a lot of people that stand out in a really good way.
I'm completely with that. Let's talk through some of those people. And I think the first name that you brought up is Christian. And you said essentially the same thing that I've been thinking myself, which was people loved this guy after the premiere. And I didn't dislike him, but I was reserving judgment about how much of this was being put on. But after episode two now, I'm sold that I am in on Christian for the long haul, I think, at this point, and that this is not just some kind of persona that he's putting on for the show. He seems to really enjoy being out there and being the narrator. I'm sure this is not going to be a shock to him now, seeing these episodes play out and see how much of his content is making it onto the show, and I think that's with totally good reason. I am, at this point now, on episode two, despite maybe being a little bit late to the party, officially in on Christian. What do you like so much about this guy?
Yes, I am also a Chris Stan at this point. Mm-hmm. I had to get that in there. It's one thing if you're playing up we've seen plenty of nerds recently on Survivor. I think he's the closest to Cochran in terms of being a little bit self-deprecating and over the top in a nerdy way sometimes, but he feels like the real deal. And that's what it took me two episodes to see, because it's not only him giving these confessionals about how nerdy he is and how smart he is and using all kinds of vocabulary, but he's doing it in the interactions with other people. I mean, at this point, the meme of him counting things with the log, all his little moments interacting with the group before the vote, he is himself every second, and the confessional persona has translated into the real life persona. Plus, he helped me get my Maryland mentions quota in there. I mean, there were like three mentions of the state of Maryland this episode with the Mason-Dixon line. So I didn't even know he's from Baltimore. I'm all in on Christian. I'm sold at this point. His analogies were so much better than Ryan Ulrich's with the roller coaster. Like, that was an actually good analogy. I was going to say
he gets points just for making a good tribal council analogy. Ryan being one of the more glaring examples in recent memory, but this is something that a lot of people have been guilty of, is making just horrifying bad analogies at tribal council. And this one about the roller coaster and the fear of something going wrong, almost making it like that's the exciting part. That is spot on with Survivor, and that alone is going to have me really high on Christian as we enter episode three at the very least.
Yeah, I think we've said it about Christian. He's playing the game really well too. I mean, he's not a game bot because he is such an interesting personality on the show. He's obviously going to be strategic, but he's enough fun in confessionals and with other people that we can enjoy both aspects of that. And I think that's a really fun dynamic where he is bringing a gameplay and an intelligence to the show, but also in a way that's fun and fresh.
So do you think that Christian is someone who in your mind has winner upside? Because I agree with you that he's not coming across as a game bot right now, and I think he's doing a much better job than I would have anticipated with the interpersonal bonds, and as we'll get to, he's found himself in a, it seems like, a fantastic spot in this tribe. But I do think if they do find themselves in a favorable situation post-merge, and Christian is someone who's in there with a chance, he's going to have an impossible time coming across as anything other than super smart, right?
Yeah, and I think he also is likable enough. You see the whole tribe react to his analogy and say, man, he's so good. I think he's just going to be too much of a threat late, and I doubt that he has the challenge potential to go on a big run. So I think he has winner upside in his potential as a player, but I don't see him getting there in the season, especially with, I mean, going back to the theme, especially with that underdog and David status highlighted, he represents that so strongly. And you talked about last week being the most Goliath-like on the David tribe and the most David-like on the Goliath tribe, and he absolutely does not fit that. So I can't see him getting to the end most likely, but he certainly does have the skills, I think, to win in some scenarios.
Yeah. Christian 2.0, like Cochran 2.0, could be a pretty dangerous player, I think.
Yeah, I think if he's in a cast with big players and everything, although I feel like in some of those seasons you have such big personalities and the social game kind of takes another level, and maybe at that point it would be a little bit overwhelming for him, but I don't know. He seems mentally strong. He seems like he could handle himself. So there's potential on both seasons. I think this theme is not setting up really well for him.
Okay. Well, what do you think about this Mason-Dixon alliance that we saw so much of? Shout out to Maryland. Are you Mason or Dixon? You're on the Mason side of the line?
Well, wait. I don't actually know how the Mason-Dixon line works, except that it's the line that divides the North and the South, and it goes through Maryland to Kentucky. I guess one side is Mason and one side's Dixon, but Maryland
isn't the South the Dixon side?
Is that right? I guess that makes sense.
Isn't that what Dixie is?
I mean, sure. Okay. This is news to me. I'm going to say that you're probably right on this. Maryland is on the South, but I feel like calling Maryland a Southern state would get you laughed at by most people. So,
okay. I definitely do not know what I'm talking about, so don't sweat my opinion on that too hard.
Let's just say that nobody actually refers to the Mason-Dixon line in normal conversation, but it is a pretty arbitrary thing, and especially because Maryland is in most ways a liberal state these days, that no one actually considers that the breakdown of North and South at this point.
Okay, got it. I certainly don't think to myself that Maryland would be what I would consider. I would say Virginia is probably pushing it.
Virginia's right on the border, and you can make the argument either way. I think that's about as borderline a state as you can get.
All right. Well, what do you think about this Mason-Dixon alliance that we've seen developing here between Christian and Nick?
I mean, it seems strong. It seems like it's got legs, not to make a thoroughbreds pun there, but I a lot of people hated the name. I liked it because of the Maryland reference. I appreciated that, so I will be higher on it than some. I definitely think both of them have long-term potential and could go really far. We can talk about Nick at this point while we're here. He definitely had a really good episode two. I think episode one, they really highlighted that he was in danger. The whole previously on for episode two talked about how he was in danger. Clearly, we're supposed to know that he was on the outs. And sometimes that could be a bad thing for him that we see that, well, he really was disliked early. But he, you know, he had a really good bounce back episode. Clearly, the loss of strength helped him. And, you know, I think that he has a good shot to go a long way in this game. I've heard a lot of buzz about him as a potential winner. I don't really buy that. I don't think that he can get there. I think that he is a little bit too obviously strategic. I mean, he talked about a tribal. He's like, this game is built on deceit. And I don't feel like you want to say that. I don't know. I could be wrong. Obviously, people talk about lying and stuff all the time. But I think he's just a little bit too smarmy, a little bit too out there with being strategic. He was really going after early, the first person to talk about alliances. So I think him and Christian will go far together, but I think Christian is the person who has the better long-term prospects than Nick.
Yeah, it's interesting because I would have thought that Christian would probably be the one talking in like the more blunt terms, the same way Cochran like famously did during Survivor 26. And I think people responded well to it, and they talked about it in like post-game press, is Cochran would talk openly about how, you know, I'm making this vote based on strategic considerations and what I think is best for me and my alliance and how I think other people are going to be acting. And I don't think that's necessarily the worst thing to say if you are someone like Christian, or in this case like Nick, and put it out there that, hey, you know, I'm going to be acting in my own best interest. But you are right that saying this is a game centered around deceit is probably not the way to frame it. I would imagine when you're surrounded by the only people whose confidence you need to gain for the next however long until a potential swap. But I do still think Nick seems poised for a deep role alongside Christian, if we're going to go with that theory. And I think he does seem at least socially capable enough to me to be in there as a contender for sure. So Nick is definitely going to be someone that I have a close eye on as things continue to play out here, because I definitely think he is someone we are meant to be looking at this point.
I think so, too. He's definitely a character on the season. And I will say, I don't think that quote in isolation is a problem. Just like you talked about, it can be fine to put that out there. I think when you put that in tandem with him being such a big target right away, like, that to me is a knock on his social game, that there's no real reason for him to be out early on that tribe. And yet he almost was. And so there's something already deceitful or strategic that he gives off in his personality. So I don't think you should double down on that in any way, especially right before you're deceiving half the tribe with the vote. So yeah. I think that to me signifies some problems that could hurt him long term. I think he's in a fine spot right now, and he's clearly in the majority, and he has this good bond with Christian that I don't think people will figure out really early on. And that's why I do think he can go pretty far, but I think there are some red flags we can see early.
Right. This is a take that frankly probably belongs in the edit zone, but I have no idea what to make of it, so I'm not that concerned, and I don't think people will care that much, so I'll put it out here now, because I would 100% forget to just, if I was going to try to wait an hour to remember to bring it up then. The take is this. They could have shown us during Pat's medevac episode that anyone was in danger potentially on that David tribe, and they chose to show us Nick, and that's got to be for some kind of reason. I have no idea what that reason is. Maybe it's because he's the next one out, and maybe it's because he's the eventual winner, or anywhere in between, but I do think it is at least worth noting.
Yeah, maybe it was just to make him have his own underdog story, because this whole episode, a lot of it was framed around, wow, Nick was the target, but now we got to readjust. Even Carl was saying that, and so it was a legitimate storyline that was happening. They told that story. I agree, it could mean a number of different things. I just think, like, I think all of us, when he was telling the story about his mom, I think everybody's first reaction was, oh, man, he's lying about this, isn't he? Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't feel that way about someone who was trying to be authentic and genuine. And certainly I don't feel that way anymore. It was a really compelling story. It was very moving. But I feel like when all of us watching are leaning into that already, I don't know, there's something there. But I can certainly understand what you're saying. There's something to watch out for with him. He certainly has a role in this season. What it is, I really don't know.
Yeah. Well, I want to return to a concept that you brought up, that I brought up in our episode one podcast, the idea of the most Goliath-y David and the most David-y person on the Goliath tribe. And for me, the most Goliath-y David, certainly after episode two, is Davey, in my mind, at this point. He's being shown as the provider. He's finding the hidden immunity idol. Everyone seems to like him. Are you on board with that, or do you think there are other contenders for that kind of title, if that's even something that's important? Or, and more generally, if you are on board with that, what do you think of Davey?
Well, I'll go two ways. First of all, I know everybody's dying to hear the award here, mm-hmm. the most coveted, most Goliath-y David. But I was going to say, I think it's Elizabeth.
Okay, that's totally fair, too.
Yeah, but we can talk about Davey for a second. I love Davey. I think he's doing great. He's a lot of fun. His episode one octopus scene was great. He has energy. He is clearly playing. And I like that we saw a little bit of his story before he found the idol. Again, props to the editors not giving us the emotional whatever after the idol, setting it up before that and then leading into it. I thought that was nice. The one question I have is we've seen him a little bit have a relationship set up with Carl. Other than that, we haven't seen any of his personal relationships. That could be because we don't feel like he was as blindsided by the vote. He clearly was, but he was a little bit left out of the loop in the decision-making, I think, compared to what we saw with Carl being super close with Jess. So I'm not worried about him near term at all. I don't think he's next to go. I think he's in a fine spot, and he seems really likable, and I don't think people have any interest in going after him. But I think we do need to see a lot more of his social game before we lock on to him as a potential winner or anything.
Yeah, my concern is the last several seasons, we've gotten the Malcolm Alley on HHH, and then who was it? Stephanie Johnson on Ghost Island get the really glowing treatment early on, and I fell in love with all of them, and then they just like rip my heart out and take them away from me early, and I feel like someone is getting that treatment on this season, and now I'm starting to get nervous that it's Davey, but I'm at this point still feeling good about him, and I'm just trying to emotionally prepare myself for the bad timelines, I suppose, but as of right now, it does seem like he was totally blindsided by how the vote went down, but I wouldn't be super worried about him being the next target as things stand.
Yeah, I mean, he has an idol that buys him some more time. I think that he's in it for the at least to the merge. So I'm not worried about him being the robbed pre-merge goddess. But I think a lot of us are rooting for him. I'm certainly rooting for him. There's nothing not to like so far.
Okay, and let's return to your most Goliath-y, David. And I definitely do see where you're coming from this perspective. And I would guess a lot of people probably are on your side in this debate that everyone's having about who's the most Goliath-y, David. Talk a little bit about Elizabeth and what you think makes her stand out in that respect.
Well, she's great. She's got a little bit of Lauren Rimmer in her, so that's immediately we can all appreciate that. I think that she... I mean, you have to love someone who is a big character who also really shifted her game into gear this episode when she needed to. I think she played everything perfectly. That's not a hot take at all. Everybody thought she played well. As soon as her ally comes up, she nods her head. She says yes. And then she goes and tells her ally. And in a way that she made sure Lyrsa, I think, kept it quiet for a while. They were patient. She's the one who came up with the plan to pivot the vote to Jessica. I mean, how... You can't do much better in an episode than she did while I think still maintaining a likable status with everyone on the tribe. I think that you would see more blowback on people like Christian or Nick than you would Elizabeth, at least if I had to guess. Also, side note, like how genius was she for she gave Christian the Star Trek fingers. Is that that's like the thing, right? With the spread twos, you know, the pinky and the...
Yeah,
you know
yeah, the Spock thing.
Yeah, she was explaining the pairings and gave that to Christian. Like, that was the most genius move I've seen in seasons.
That's brilliant. I missed that both times I watched the episode, but that's absolutely brilliant, yeah.
I actually got it. I think Danny pointed that out, so he said to say hi to you also.
Well, hey, I tell Danny I say hi.
I will. But, yeah, really, I mean, so she knows how to play individual people. She seems incredibly likable. It seems like she had relationships with everybody on the tribe. And, I also think that, I mean, she's huge. I mean, she's like 10 feet taller than Lyrsa. So clearly I think she can fit in with the Goliath. She can be likable. She's this charming Southern cowgirl. I don't know. I mean, everybody I've talked to from the casual side and the superfan side likes her. And when you have that kind of universal support, you're doing something right, and I think it means the people on the show are going to like you too.
Yeah, I think she and Christian probably are benefiting – and maybe Lyrsa, too, to some extent, and certainly plenty of other people could be candidates for this. But I would imagine one very valuable thing that one could have going for oneself on Survivor is as you spend so much time in casting and you just see all of these people, you begin to form just kind of mental impressions of how they're going to be if you potentially start interacting with them. And I think in the case of both Christian and Elizabeth, they probably drastically exceeded those expectations, and that, I would guess, is a pretty good thing to have going for you early on in the game of Survivor. And on top of that, it really does seem like Elizabeth is just completely out there crushing it based on everything we've seen so far. And again, this is, as we always say, an edited show where we certainly can't take anything as gospel, but they also can't just fabricate this kind of stuff out of thin air. And a lot of the things we saw out of Elizabeth over both of these episodes, I thought left me with nothing but reasons to feel good, frankly, about her long-term prospects here. And I think she's got to be among the lead contenders at this point. Certainly on the David tribe.
Now I just had like a flash in my mind of panic, and now I'm seeing her as the potential pre-merge like we love her so much person, and I don't want to put that out there, but it just my heart sank for no reason.
It's gotta be someone. I mean, there are plenty of candidates. Like, I think a lot of people have gotten compelling content that would make the general audience like them. And so I do think there are a lot of different directions they could go from that angle. But I do think before we hit the merge, our heart's going to be broken at least once. Our collective hearts are going to be broken at least once with someone leaving pre-merge. And thankfully, for me at least, I think that's like, I've always thought of that as a good thing since that's become a thing. I remember the Malcolm Boot episode coming in and saying like, oh, God bless you for making him look so good up until the moment it all got pulled out from underneath him.
Yeah, you want to feel at least something with some of these boots. I think you have to have a little bit of heartbreak to get your eventual payoff of happiness and glory at the end. Otherwise, it's a little bit too predictable. Although, I don't know, I feel like if we go back to Kageyan, there wasn't anything that – maybe Alexis Maxwell crying broke our hearts. But I don't know if there was one pre-merge boot that made us really so sorrowful, and yet we still love the season. So usually I think, though, it's a fine thing to have as long as there's plenty of other characters. But just going back to Elizabeth, I mean, I think that she's someone that you would never perceive to be super strategic, and yet she does seem very strategic, or at least – understands the game of relationships enough to save her ally, to build numbers, to work with people. And so that's someone who is going to take people by surprise. She's going to be a strength in challenges. She wasn't any, she clearly was not brought up in the, you know, we need to get rid of a weak girl thing. So she's got a lot going for her. And I don't think she's going to ever be as outwardly of a threat as somebody like Christian, which we talked about earlier.
Yeah. I think she is definitely in the mold of the type of player where if you are a woman-owned survivor who's going to be really good in the challenges for the most part and not going out of your way to be off-putting to anyone, and it certainly seems like Elizabeth fits both of those criteria, you're going to have a much easier time than pretty much anyone else in making the merge. And we always use Amanda Kimmel as like the classic example of this, of like, it's so hard for her to ever leave pre-merge. And I think Elizabeth could be in that same kind of player profile where she's going to have, I would say, some of the highest equity out of anyone on the season to make it to the merge.
Yeah, although I can't think of a single other way in which Elizabeth and Amanda Kimmel are similar.
I would believe you if you told me Elizabeth was from Montana, but I don't think she is. I don't think so.
Yeah.
She looks,
I guess so.
It just aesthetically looks like Montana.
Sure. Yeah, I can see it. I will say I think I read one of Jessica's exit interviews, and she was talking about how Elizabeth was this huge personality who like would just like yell things when they were on the mat talking to Jeff. And you see it a little bit like when Pat gets medevaced and it's like this somber moment. And she's just like, the fight is on. Like she just kind of goes for it and doesn't hold back. And I think that's a good thing, because I bet the other tribe isn't thinking of her as some super strategic player. Like, they just think that she's this like fun, big personality. And so I don't know. We're gushing about Elizabeth, but I think it's all deserved at this point.
Well, let's stay on this alliance that it seems like has come together at least after this second vote. We have the Mason-Dixon line. We have Elizabeth. What did you think of, it seems like at this point, her partner in crime, Lyrsa, through this point, who was able to escape this vote after being targeted by Carl and company and getting some votes cast on her. Where do you think she's sitting at this point?
I think Lyrsa's sitting great at this point. I mean, clearly there's been an alliance formed for at least the vote. I don't think when you have that sort of that divisive of a vote, 5-4, I can't imagine that they're just going to flip back right away and say, well, now we need to go for strength, so now we can get rid of Lyrsa. I view her as pretty safe as a result of this. She clearly was the person we needed to stay. She was always going to bring more to the table than Jess. She's also not racist, as far as I know. So that's good. But she's just like very fun and fiery. And yet also, like, I don't want to say that because she's had fiery confessionals, but she clearly held her tongue when she needed to. She was willing to not go for Carl, even though he threw out her name. So she showed a lot of patience and poise. And I had a discussion with Curtis Morrison on Twitter. Well, not a discussion. I said like one tweet, but there was
a
discussion on Twitter
in the year 2018.
Yeah, there was a discussion about Lyrsa's chances. I just said I was higher than him on her because I think that she has shown a lot of potential. She's clearly been a big part of the two episodes, and that's in large part because she was a potential target. But I think that we saw so much good stuff from her that we can't. I can't help but thinking that she at least has a shot. I think that if she can survive it to a swap, she seems like someone who can build relationships. Someone like Elizabeth is not someone you would expect her to pair with naturally. She didn't expect to either, but it shows that both of them have this open-mindedness and this ability to interact with a lot of different people. So I thought Lyrsa had a really great episode. Plus, she studies anthropology. And she knows how to study people. That's how she knew she was the target, as well as being told 7 times that she was the target, which I thought was a really funny line. But I'm very in on Lyrsa. She's one of my favorites early on, and I do think she has a lot of long-term potential.
Yeah, I am Hirsa for Lyrsa.
Nice.
Thank you. I definitely feel like at this point, we've got to be feeling at least decent, to say the least, about Lyrsa. Like you said, it seems like she has a lot of personality to her, but also is able to hold her tongue when the situation calls for it. And that is a fantastic combination, I think, on Survivor, to come across as genuine, but also be able to rein it in when need be. I think Lyrsa is someone who, if she gets to the merge, pretty much no matter how the political situation breaks down, I think she's going to be someone who is there at final six at the very least pretty much every single time. I think there's that type of Survivor player that just is always, once they make it to the merge, there's just no way they're going to get voted out until near the very end of the game, if there. So I think Lyrsa is someone who could easily be underestimated and left far too long, and find her way into a situation where she's very close to the end and drastically not being viewed as the kind of threat that she is. And that is a great position to be in Survivor. And on top of that, I just really thought she brings it to an extent that not many others do in this cast when it comes to the confessionals. So hashtag Hirsa for Lyrsa for sure. And very much looking forward to seeing what else she can bring to this season, because I'm hoping it's going to be a lot.
And there's a really easy comparison for her, which you know who it is, right?
I am going to save what I think the easy comparison is. I have a very Colin Stone take coming in the edit zone as things pertain to Lyrsa.
Oh, should I not ruin it?
No,
No.
Let's tease it. Go for it.
Oh, I was gonna say Lyrsa is Lyrsandra.
Yeah, that is the spirit of the take.
Yeah. Okay. All right. It works. It works very well. I'm into that take as well. And if she can survive till the merge, that's the question. If she can survive till the merge, she's got a lot of potential. She's the type of person who can stir stuff up. But like you said, is also willing to hold her tongue. And so, yeah, we're both here stuff for Lyrsa. I'm in on that.
All right. Awesome. And more to come on that front once we hit the edit zone, but I don't feel comfortable. I really try to put the Sandra stuff on the back burner as often as I can on these podcasts. we'll save that for a little later.
We're saying this in a positive way this time.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Season of positivity.
Let's close out on this fivesome that just all voted together. I came in after the premiere very high on Gabby. I think probably highest out of the entire cast. Where are you on Gabby at this point?
I'm all over the place, which I think is the only appropriate way be with Gabby. I like her. There's no way she's not a big important player on this season at this point. She has gotten a lot of focus. I'm sure you can talk more about that in the edit zone, but I mean, she's clearly good enough to get a hold of a lot of relationships on the tribe. She's, I think, got a lot going for her. She's pretty strong socially. She's identified people that she needs to work with. The only thing is why is she so paranoid? I don't know why it seemed like, and I couldn't tell how this was being presented, if it was justified or totally not. It certainly didn't seem based in reality, but I mean, she was like crying confessional all of a sudden. She was like asking Christian if she's stupid out of nowhere. Like the girl is playing well, and I think needs to understand that and own that. I do think that this kind of over paranoia early on will actually work out fine for her. Like, I feel like, this is from the limited games I've played in a Survivor style, I feel like if you act really paranoid about getting voted out, especially when you're not the target, it actually makes people more likely to reassure you. Like, they feel like they have to work with you and comfort you and push you down. So she has those relationships and those connections where she is fine and she will be fine. And acting so vulnerable, I think, will actually make people like her and make sure they talk to her and reassure her more. I think it can get grating if you do it for too long. And so I hope that she kind of builds that confidence to keep playing well and keep going strong. That would be the only weakness I see for her. And it could also really definitely hurt her in a final tribal situation. We've seen that before, certainly with someone like Hannah. But a lot of potential there. I don't know where it's going to go. I feel like it could go super well, or it could kind of fall off a cliff at some point.
Yeah, I'm totally with that. I think there's a lot of potential, and I do see a lot of value in getting off to almost paranoid, is I think the word you would use, and that's probably not an inaccurate description of how Gabby was behaving here. Like, that kind of start isn't necessarily bad for the reasons you described, and also just that being a good mentality to have. Like, I've said forever that a certain degree of paranoia is not only healthy on Survivor, it's mandatory. To play really good Survivor, you need to be on your toes and concerned about your opponents having ideas that you may not be in on, and you need to be willing to give other people credit, essentially. And it does seem like Gabby is certainly embracing that. My concern is perhaps a bit too much, right? It seems like maybe, and this could potentially just be creative storytelling, but maybe she was overestimating her own chances of being the boot there, which, again, be worried, but not needlessly worried constantly. And I would, at this point, be a little concerned that the latter may be more of the case than I was initially anticipating.
I think it's always better to side on the spectrum of being in the spectrum of paranoid versus overconfident. You always want to fall more towards the paranoid side.
Of course, yeah.
100%, much safer of an outcome. At least you can do something and change it up or whatever than just having no idea. I don't think it was creative storytelling, because you literally see Elizabeth walk up to her and say, hey, you know, I think we need to do what's best for the tribe. Oh, is it me? Like, she was so quick to react and say that right. She was the boot. But I think, yeah, like you said, I think that she needs to not prey on that too much. She needs to lessen that a little bit, especially I think when you merge kind of with other tribes, they don't know you as well. They want to feel comfortable with you, and they want to feel like you can trust them. And I think there's enough going on with the David tribe, and I'm sure there's been so many conversations that people do feel reassured enough with Gabby. It seems like she also, more than maybe we saw, directed the vote, because Christian had a quote where he said, like, Gabby's basically begging me to get the vote to go how she thinks is the right way. And that is what ended up happening. So I think that if she didn't push so hard for that, maybe Christian and Nick do just go with a simple plan and vote out Lyrsa. So I think Gabby has a lot of potential power. It just depends on how much she can control herself to end up wielding that.
Okay. In defense of Gabby, for sure, the conversation we saw where she was trying to find out what was going on from B, and I think Carl was there too, I would have thought they were lying to me and targeting me based on what we saw there as well. They just, yep, it's Jessica, don't worry about it.
Did not look great. But yeah, that's the one moment in the episode where I thought there might be creative storytelling. That did not seem to totally go how it was shown. I don't know. It seemed a little bit disjointed.
Yeah,
but if that was the actual case, then yeah, it was terrible.
I could certainly see that not being the entire context of how that conversation went down. But let's close out on this David tribe, I suppose. What have you been making to this point of B and Carl, and how they may be able to, if at all, get out of this situation they're now in the minority?
Well, I was thinking about if they have to go to a tribal again, which I don't know. Are they swapping? It seems like it might happen next episode, but at least they haven't teased anything. So my thought is that B would probably be the next to go. And I think that we haven't seen a lot of her. I don't know. I'm not sure how good she is with the relationships or with connecting with people. It doesn't seem like she was talking to that many people on the tribe outside of her kind of what she thought was the Five Alliance. I liked what she had to say. I think her big moment was talking about the challenge, and that they can't view themselves as weak and unable to win. They have to have this optimistic outlook, which I agree with. I think that's a great message. But this is a small thing, but I noticed her saying, like, you guys can't think like this. You guys can't act this way. You have to be confident. And at Tribal, she talked about her own experience with the storm, not the tribe's experience like everybody else did. So to me, I mean, this could be super reading into it, but I thought that she had a little bit more of like a self-standard isn't the right word, but like she's not understanding and making herself connect with the group as much as she needs to in her words. I think saying something like using the we to describe your tribe and your situation really does bond people with you a lot, with your alliance, with your tribe. Like, you need to be presenting yourself as acting in the group's best interest or feeling the group's interest. And when you don't do that, you, I think, isolate yourself from at least some people. So that's, it could be really reading into a couple words, but I thought B, to me, she's the next boot if they go again. I don't think that she has, Carl, I think, can ingratiate himself, has the ability to say, I'm a guy, we need some strength at this point. Davey seems much more likable to the whole tribe to me. B, I don't see the dynamics that would allow her to pick up the pieces. I don't think she's a huge Survivor fan. I just kind of feel like there's not much of a rosy outlook for her.
Yeah, Austin, I assume you're familiar with the University of Miami turnover chain.
Yeah. Okay. I actually just saw it the other day, but I don't totally understand it.
Okay, so when now this has become like a phenomenon that's sweeping the nation of college football. When the defense at the University of Miami gets a turnover, like they get the ball from the offense.
Yeah.
Whoever is responsible for it, as they go back to the sidelines, as the offense takes the field, gets to wear this awesome chain, the turnover chain, and like whoever has the most recent turnover always gets to wear the chain when the defense.
Oh, it's
is on
literally
this
a chain. I didn't realize.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's like a necklace, and it's sick as hell. And so now all these other schools have turnover, whatever, like turnover throne, turnover plank at one place, like, and so the turnover and the chain have become recurring things all over the sports landscape, including on a podcast I listen to called Pardon My Take, where every week during the NFL season, they give the Dunn chain to a different NFL team. And this is a roundabout and very long and drawn out version of saying, after this episode, my takeaway is B is the person that I'm hanging the Dunn chain on this week.
I think she's the only person in the entire cast that I would hang the Dunn chain on.
Yeah, that's what I think. She is the first one for me that is getting the Dunn chain.
Yeah, we've gotten that she's mentally tough, but also said that she kind of gave up during the storm. There aren't many. This is getting way mean. I don't think she does not have redeeming qualities as a person. As a Survivor player, I'm not seeing the way that she can flip this or pull numbers another way. Clearly she didn't work very well with Gabby. She does not have the gift of Gabby. pretty bad.
That's by the way a future podcast title. I'm gonna steal that.
The gift of Gabby.
Yeah.
Feel free. I that's fine. I'm on board with the Dunn chain of the week going to be.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. So I guess let's also, while we're on the Davids, let's talk a little bit just about this tribal council or Jessica in general. I didn't have a ton of notes from the tribal council itself, although I was curious about where you stand on teenagers on Survivor. And this is something that has come up occasionally over the years, ever since like Will Wall, or I guess Julia Sokolowski even before that. Where do you stand on this seeming, I'll call it an influx, even though it's only been like three or four people at this point, of very young people on Survivor?
I don't find it to be a compelling storyline. Maybe that's because I've seen a lot of young people / teenagers play Survivor in my time. But I don't know. I mean, they're people on Survivor. If they have merits of playing, then that's fine. I think that there wasn't anything compelling about Jessica to me. She actually seemed like someone who would be a decent player and had a pretty good equity to do well a lot of the time. And this seemed like the absolute worst scenario possible for her in terms of losing a close alliance member and a big guy first for unforeseeable reasons. She definitely did seem a little overconfident with her tribal words, but if she wasn't able to get the vote on her side, I think there's certainly can be questions of her social game and her abilities and reassuring people like Gabby or whatever, but she seems solid in all aspects.
Right. She didn't seem to be going out of her way to like offend people. It's not like it's Twitter or anything. I have such a hard time signing off on putting 19-year-olds out there with these I think this is a generally pretty older cast as things skew for it's not. There are just some older people on it. But
it's more than one person.
Yeah,
over
seriously, 30. It's older than a couple of recent casts, but probably not one of the older casts in general. But honestly, 19 is just so young, even to the people who I'm not even talking about, like the Mike Whites and the Natalies. I mean. Angelina and Davey are going to look at a 19-year-old and see a child, and the same would be true of anyone on the Gen X tribe looking at Will Wall at a final tribal council scenario. It will never leave my mind. David Wright in his post-game interview saying, from day one, there was nothing Will Wall ever could have done that would get me to give $1 million to a teenager. And I think it's unfair, frankly, to Jessica to put her on when she's this young. And let me be clear, I think there are plenty of teenagers who could be fantastic Survivor players. Michael Yerger, of course, another good example of this from last season. And he got away with convincing people he was not a teenager, which I think would have been crucial had he gone on to win. And I just don't know how the producers are justifying doing this over and over again, or like, because I do think, as I was saying, there are plenty of them could be great players, and I understand that element of it, but I think that could only really come in a scenario where the whole cast is like a Big Brother cast where there's one person over 27.
I guess I just don't buy that there aren't plenty of 19-year-olds that can succeed in a way. Like Michael Yerger is a great example, because I mean, I think it's right for these people to lie and say they're a couple years older because of what you said. There's some weird thing where people won't respect that person because of their age. But I think there's a lot of people who have gone through enough in their life, are capable enough, are just happen to be mature enough to fit in with that group of people, to present as older. We've all come across those people in our lives, and I don't think it's incumbent on the producers to rule out those people because they're under 20. I think like people gave Fabio $1 million when he was 21 and I'm sure did not seem as mature as some 18 and 19 year olds. It can be done. I think that if they feel like the person falls in correctly with the cast, if they're interesting enough, if they're confident and mature and self-assured enough to be part of this experience, I personally don't have an issue with it, and I don't think it's the wrong move. And I also, I mean, yeah, you could have them wait for a couple of years, but you can't always guarantee that people will come back into the cast. I'm always in favor of you got to make the cast as good as you can for this one cast. Treat every cast like it's the only cast you're ever going to create, and then worry about the later ones at another time. I know that's different when they factor in the themes and whatnot, but I don't know. I Jessica did not seem totally out of her league to me. I mean, yeah, you have people like Carl saying that she's like my daughter, but that bonded them together, and it's okay to have those dynamics. Those dynamics of age will always exist, even if the youngest person is 21 or 22. Granted, that's different because the cast skew a little bit younger, but I don't know. I personally don't have an issue with the age thing.
Well, the good news is this. Everyone listening right now can just bet everything they own on a teenager winning Survivor soon, because I've probably done 90 solid minutes on how bad of an idea it is and how drawing dead they all are. So lock it in that it's going to happen, and I'm going to look like a moron in the next couple of years at the absolute latest. So if it's not Jessica, which unfortunately it seems like it's not going to be, whoever the teenagers are.
It doesn't look like it?
Yeah, we don't know. There might
hot
be
take.
Surprise Redemption Island. You never know on David versus that. Hey, what more of a David story could there be than overcoming being voted out?
That's right. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the people on the Goliath tribe. And I guess let's smoothly transition. Let's kind of do a crossfade here, Austin. Let's talk about the most David-y Goliath. And I think it is fair to say at this point that is looking like Natalie. Yes.
Yeah. Natalie is certainly the underdog of underdogs. Maybe that's what we're getting in the story, is that Natalie, I'm sorry, you didn't say Queen Natalie. You have to
Nat Queen Cole.
Specify.
It's her official
yes,
full
that was
legal
that
name.
Was very good. I retweeted that. It was good. I mean, maybe that's what we're seeing, is that she is the underdog on the Goliath tribe, which would be ironic. And maybe she'll have this self-awakening moment where she's like, maybe I don't have all the power at all moments of my life. This is one of them. We can talk about Natalie first, because I think it would be a shame not to. There are so many scenarios I think this could go. When you have someone who is such an obvious boot in the first two episodes, to me, there's almost no chance that she's out in episode three and, right. Or even four. And that is very, very exciting. I hope that either there's a swap or something shakes up on this tribe. I think there's a few ways that even on her tribe, she can survive, though it does not seem very likely at this point. She could find herself being in a situation where she's on a strong tribe, thankfully. She survives until things shake up, and then she's a total free agent. She goes Natalie Napalm, and she blows up the whole game. I mean, there's... there's a lot to say. I don't know. What are your thoughts on Natalie?
I think Natalie Napalm is the next Chaos Cass.
Yes.
I'm with you. I had the exact same thought of, it reminded me of Ciri in Game Changers, where
yes,
all
exactly.
we saw in the early episodes was how screwed Ciri would be if her team had to go to a vote. And, of course, they don't end up having to go to a vote, and she is able to do her own thing and sink her hooks into people for the fourth time, or I guess the third time, unfortunately. But no, really, the fourth time. It wasn't really her fault in Heroes vs. Villains. She had, like, six people on her side. I think Natalie is, and I think and hope and pray that Natalie is someone who is going to be around for a while, and I think that's going to be the case, frankly, just because of how beaten over the head we're getting with what a bad spot she seems to be in. I like you, don't see any circumstance where that story is resolved by, well, they lose episode 3, and of course it's Natalie who leaves, as we've been setting up for the last 2 weeks.
Right, and we can talk about, there are some things that Natalie is doing right. She's given multiple people the heads up. One that I didn't even notice on the first watch was she went up to Kara and said, hey, like, you and Dan got a cool with the showman stuff. People are catching on, noticing. She did that with Mike last episode with the idol. That's at least two people that she reached out to. She also has the relationship with John, which he said himself. There are, to me, the scenario that seems most likely is that we have a swap soon, and she ends up being the piece that some of the Goliaths need to stick together and keep the numbers, or she flips. So swing vote Natalie is a fun scenario that I would like to be in. I'm a little bit worried, because I really do like Jeremy, that it could end up bouncing back on him, that he's the one who needs to be saved. He needs the help, and she ends up ending him. But I'd rather her end him. So, I mean, you know, all things can go however they need to, as long as Natalie persists.
Okay.
But I think that there, she is attempting to build relationships. I think it's interesting that she's a smart woman. She's very successful. She seems not self-aware for sure here, but I think that she must be having a lot of conversations with every person one-on-one. She's saying that everybody, she seems to get along with everybody unless they're lying to me, which implies that people are promising her things or talking to her or connecting or attempting to connect with her. So I think that there are scenarios where she can flip the vote, where she does have relationships if somebody else ostracizes themselves enough. But I, you know, clearly she's not playing well right now, but there, I still think, is potential for her.
Yeah, I think we're going to be talking about Natalie for many weeks to come, and I'm very much looking forward to that. Someone you just mentioned is Jeremy, who seemed to go out of his way to try to help Natalie kind of take a better approach to the political game than she seemed to during the early days. I am with you that it seems like Jeremy is someone that is that we're meant to be taking like a closer look at this point, and may, like, I'm with your idea that maybe it's him who needs Natalie's help, and she either does or does not come through with that. I think that is a compelling read on why that scene may have been included. But I also think it's a possibility that they're just, you know, Jeremy is out there really exceeding expectations, I think. I'm not sure, you know, as tuned out as I was preseason, I didn't hear a ton of people talking about Jeremy being on their radar as a potential winner or someone they were particularly looking forward to. But I frankly feel like Jeremy, for me, through the first two episodes, would probably be in easily my top five characters to this point, and someone I think has done a pretty good job.
He's definitely a standout. I mean, first of all, he's very funny. I loved a lot of his lines. The one that I was probably my favorite was, I think Dan's in a showman's, I think Kara's in a strategy. That's a great, great line. You know, he did a lot of good things. He had great instincts with the Dan Idol thing. He totally nailed every second of that. He's got the information, which is just as more important than having the idol itself, especially when people know about it. I appreciate him going up to Natalie and trying a number of different approaches with her. I think it may end up biting him, but I don't think it was the wrong move to go and try to do it. I thought the conversation of kind of having this black kinship was interesting, something we actually saw mentioned on both tribes, which, again, more reasons to have diversity on the show rather than these people being by themselves. Let them explore the dynamics of of those relationships and what it's like to fit in as a minority. So yeah, he had a great episode. We saw his bond with Mike. The one thing that I was a little bit kind of piqued my interest was we had this conversation with him and Mike where Mike's holding the spear and he's like, don't stab yourself in the foot, which was really funny. But he also said, I am kind of bossy though. And I don't know why that was in there. If it wasn't like an actual defining trait of his personality, he was like, I got to work on that. So it was one of those things where they showed more of a conversation. It's one of the reasons I've liked the season so far, but that made me wonder if that might turn people off to him later, or if he's going to become overbearing with that. Every single other thing that he did this episode and in the premiere too seemed great, but yeah. We haven't seen him any sign that he does have really close alliances either, unless I'm missing something.
No, and to highlight that line, I was totally with you. I thought that stood out, the line where he was talking with Mike White and told him, hey, watch out with the spear, don't hit your foot. I'm kind of bossy, I need to work on that. I could easily see that going either direction. Like, that is absolutely a scene that if that was all we were seeing of Jeremy, and I guess this is kind of edit zony, but whatever, I would be a little more nervous. But when everything else that we've seen from Jeremy is him, see, as far as I can tell, doing a pretty good job, I am at this point leaning that is him, hey, look at how early he recognized, oh, this is a part of my personality that might not do me a lot of favors out here. I need to get that out of my mind and start behaving differently. And look at what a good job he's doing as a result.
And it was certainly a contrast to Natalie. Like, he recognized his own flaw. Natalie exactly, couldn't recognize yeah. the one he was pointing out. So a really good point there. And I'm also very positive with Jeremy overall. I just, besides with Mike, he didn't fall into this six-person alliance that seems to be developing on the tribe. That might be primed to blow up, so it might be okay. But there is something there are some dynamics where he could be left out. And especially now that he's not getting along with Natalie, it seems, that's not a good sign for him because he already was on the outs. And she's somebody that I think he needed. He needed to bring together this Mike, Natalie, him group. But those don't seem to be clicking at all besides him and Mike. So,
well, we haven't had a ton of time, frankly, or a real reason to explore what would or would not be clicking for the Goliaths.
Right. We got great scenes from Jeremy. There is a lot of room for him to develop that going forward. And yeah, you're right. We have not seen enough time with relationships to really know.
Let's talk about that scene with he and Mike bonding. And it's because Jeremy goes and looks through Dan's jacket and finds the idol, and Mike gives a confessional about how information about the idol is, in this case at least, more powerful than the idol itself. I don't know if I would always go that far, but in this case it honestly might be, now that Jeremy, it seems like next week, is going to tell everybody that Dan has that idol. But what did you think of Mike and that confessional and how he's been looking so far and where he stands?
I like Mike. I think that his initial issue aside, that he's in a good spot. The tribe even said, we don't want to target him. And I don't see it going towards him at all. Either I think something would be more likely to blow up with the showman stuff, or Natalie is in trouble. But Mike seems to be totally free from all of that. And if anything, the fact that he screwed up so early, I think he's now seen as super not threatening, which is a great thing for him. I think you pointed out last week that he's the most David-y of the Goliaths, and that will definitely pay benefits to him down the line. Nothing stood out to me with Mike. I'm not like here for Mike. I'm not like rooting for Ned Schneebly over everyone. But I like him, and I think there's a lot of potential for him to become a great character and become really fun. And it seemed like it was a great bounce back week for him.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And so I'm going to cede my talking about Mike the Survivor player time to just put out, it's been a while since I've done this, an endorsement for not any of his movies, but his TV show that he did for HBO with Laura Dern called Enlightened. I know there are tons of people who love School of Rock and Nacho Libre and so forth. It is not anything like either of those movies. This is truly some of the best comedy/drama blend that I've seen in years. I just watched both seasons relatively recently, and Enlightened is absolutely fantastic. Every single person who is a fan of good television, frankly. I don't know how else to put it. Should check it out. It's on HBO Go or however you watch HBO stuff. Definitely do check out Enlightened, because Mike White is a world-class writer. He writes every single episode of the show himself. It is tremendous. You must watch it. Okay. Moving on, I suppose.
coming this fall.
Yeah, coming this fall, Enlightened. Unfortunately, it was canceled after two seasons. Oh, no. But, I mean, who in the world doesn't love Laura Dern? So that by itself should be enough to check it out. But let's talk a little bit about this idol that Jeremy and Mike ended up finding out about. And let's talk about just Dan in general, because I wasn't sure what to make of him after the premiere. But after episode two, I feel like there's a little bit of a reason to be nervous about Dan's long-term prospects here, Austin.
Dan could be a big character, but in terms of his eventual outcome, he's like number two on my Dunn chain list. Like he's next in line to inherit the Dunn throne, or the throne with a turnover throne, whatever it was. I am not very high on Dan. I like Dan. I feel bad for him, but he is in trouble.
The Dunn immunity necklace is what it is.
Yeah. Well, he took the Dunn immunity necklace and put it into his jacket, which was not a great move. How do you make the line? Nobody's going to think it's in one of the only places that they could even look. Like, you literally have the whole island to bury it. It doesn't matter if you, like, you're not fooling anyone by putting it there, but at least they can't find it. They literally can find it in your jacket. It's the easiest place to search, your jacket or your bag. Like, it blows my mind that he ever thought that was a good idea.
Especially, I mean, Kara is explaining to him as he's saying, hey, this is my plan. She's saying, no, that's a terrible plan. Don't do that plan.
Right.
And then he still does the plan.
And I think it's fair to bring up Kara, too. I think Kara is actually really good. And I think that she has shown a lot of good stuff so far in the season. She's totally aware of what's going on with the showmance. I mean, there's no way that this ends up well. He's talking about the only person he can trust is Kara. This is heading towards disaster, probably a very fun disaster, but I could not be lower on Dan's chances, even though I find him to be a charming, nice guy.
He seems, I mean, it seems like in real life, he would be totally easy to hang out with and get along, find no problem with. On the Survivor Island, I feel like Dan is one of those people kind of, I already forgot. I think I was talking about Christian and someone else. Elizabeth, exceeding your expectations once you meet them on the island and being far more personable than you probably anticipated them being, and getting along better with them. I could see Dan probably having the opposite of that, where people build up this narrative during casting of what this guy is like. And while he may not fit it, fit what they had in their mind, I think it's going to be for more negative reasons than, the positive reasons that people like Elizabeth, tend to, come away, people come away with. I framed that really poorly, but you know what I'm saying, Austin, where I think he underwhelms as soon as you meet him on the Survivor Island, potentially. And I like you, am extremely nervous about Dan going forward in this game. I think he could stick around for a while. I'm not necessarily thinking he's going to be, like, the next person out, especially when he does have that idol that he can play. And I'm guessing word will get back to him that everyone knows about it. So he may just say, let's play it now and make sure nothing weird happens. And worst case scenario is I'm just safe for another week. But long-term, big picture kind of thing, I'm with you on the Dunn immunity necklace, potentially Dan being next in line for that.
Yeah, the only chance he has is that he realizes all of this when he finds out about the idol. He realizes the showmance is over. I don't know. When you have Alec Merlino saying that you're really screwing up, I feel like that's the death knell for you.
Yeah, and I mean, incidentally, there are plenty of people on the Alec being the probably the most prominent, by which I mean least prominent. Like, there are people on the Goliath tribe that we've seen virtually nothing of, but it's definitely a bad sign when all we're seeing is them popping up to trash you.
Right, right. That was the only thing I think that Alec did the whole episode was just say Dan is playing badly. Like, it's not good. It's not good when that's their one bit of airtime. And I would more lean towards him being pre-merge than not now. I don't know what it is with the Dans and having the former fat kid story. That was the same one from what was it?
Dominic on Ghost Island.
No. There was also the
Dan K. Wait, Gabon.
Wait, also that wasn't even true, right? Was that just what Corinne said?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, I might be perpetuating bad rumors. Okay, never mind.
Oh, she did say, I don't know what his deal is, if he was like a former fatty or whatever. Like, that's the confessional. So maybe she did just pull it out of thin air.
Yeah, that actually might have been totally.
You know what? So. It doesn't sound like Corinne to not be fact-checking all of her sources before slamming someone, but in this case, we may be able to leave the door open.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, I think Dan is more likely to me to be pre-merged than not.
Okay. Yeah, I would probably get on board with that, whether there is a swap or not. Frankly, I don't know if Dan is going to be making it out to like day 18 too often.
No.
Yeah. All right. So as I said, we haven't seen a ton from several people on the Goliath tribe. I guess one person we've seen a little bit from before we get to those that we haven't. We've seen some from Johnny Wrestling, whatever
Johnny
you want to call him.
Johnny Wrestling. Yeah, I don't think that was one of the 700 nicknames he had.
That's what I'm going with. Just Johnny Wrestling. do you have any takes on him?
Besides that he's Curtis Morrison's brother. You're not even going to give him his real name?
I didn't know that that was factually correct.
Yeah, you've never seen more similarities than Curtis Morrison and John Morrison?
I you know, now that you mention it, it's like, look, I don't know how I ever missed it.
Right. I'm interested in what's going on with John. We saw like the mixed week one of him having the wrestling persona and the real persona, and he was like very clear that he wants to be John, not Abraham Lincoln and the George Bushy of Tushy. This was an interesting week from John. First, he had the whole thing about, there probably was only a little bit, but he talked about wanting to work with Natalie, how nobody would suspect it. And I feel like he's just in general very, like, I don't know if anybody's ever tried so hard to be earnest and to be what they want themselves to be. Like, he seems very intent on not being this wrestling persona and this larger than life personality. Which I think is really interesting that he's so focused on having this different look. I don't know if you're picking up on the same thing as that, but that just feels like a different storyline to me. You would expect that he would be more of like the John Rocker type, where he's just like, I'm just gonna embrace being the like big deal, whatever. But he's not. He seems like he's trying to be a totally different person.
Yeah, I did. Part of me, at least, expected him to come in and almost stay in character. I thought that was at least in play as something that might happen. But you're right. It does seem like we are seeing John, the real person, John, brother of Curtis, Morrison, who is out there not only genuinely like playing Survivor as himself, but it does seem like, enjoying it and playing well and learning about himself based on what little we've seen. And I'm interested for sure in continuing to see what becomes of John and if he does eventually start leaning more into kind of a character, or if he does eventually lean even further into dropping the whole wrestling kind of facade. I think it's going to be one of the more interesting kind of personalities to track, frankly, over the course of the season, because I think it's got one of the wider ranges of outcomes. And frankly, I think John the player has one of the wider ranges of outcomes. It wouldn't shock me if there's some kind of swap and the David swap well somehow for the first time in Orange Tribe history and get like an upper hand, and he could be an easy target from the Goliath team, or I could see John in there for the long haul. I could see it going any number of different directions here, and I'm going to be really curious whichever direction it goes and seeing the kind of evolution of this character and this person, I guess.
Right, and my hope is that we get a blend of those two things, that John the person has some aspects of John the character within him, where he can tap into this big personality, this fiery self. I don't really know what he's like as a wrestler, but it seems like he at least is a big personality in a lot of ways. I mean, you can't be the mayor of Slamtown and be sitting there like silent. So there's something there that I hope it's not just two totally separated characters where there's a hybrid of the two, because that would be just more interesting TV. But I like at least that he's starting off in this front and really trying to play the game, really seems like he cares. Doing things like reaching out to somebody who is on the outs is a smart move. It's a really smart move to tell her that she's in trouble. It doesn't seem like it necessarily got back to him that he was the one who told Natalie she was in trouble. So I think that's good for him. And maybe this is a good time to transition into the whole the one alliance we've really seen on the Goliath tribe. Angelina said that her and John are a pair, which was like news to me. But that's a really interesting duo, because Angelina was my preseason winner pick. So I want to talk about her a little bit, even though she hasn't been super relevant. But she had this really cool idea of bringing these three sub pairings together, including the showmans, which I thought was a really smart way to play it. And also having six with that, where you know that you can get rid of Dan and cut off that showmans thing if you need to, especially with Kara being open about it. I thought that was a really cool idea from Angelina, a really good way to establish a majority where people still feel like they have these individual strengths and pairings. So I'd like to see if the Angelina and John thing pans out, and especially if John can pull in Natalie and they can end up working together. That would be a dream three for me.
Yeah, we didn't get to see a ton of Angelina or Allison or Natalia this week, frankly. But what we did see, as you just highlighted, of Angelina coming up with that plan, I also really liked, and more based on the premiere than episode two, but certainly overall, just in general, I've found myself really liking Angelina. Again, as someone who didn't know much about virtually any of these people entering the season, she's getting one of the lower key edits, frankly, through two episodes, but I still definitely know who she is and am very much rooting for her and excited to see how all that plays out. Like, I frankly would say if I had to be lining up people in order that I would be like interested in investing in them as like long-term survivor players who I think would generally do well against random casts and random seasons and so forth, Angelina, it would be very near the top of my list. It seems like she's got a lot of go-gettiveness in her. And I think that's tremendously valuable in Survivor. And it also seems like she's doing a great job socially. So again, one of the lower key characters, unfortunately, but I think it's just her tribe keeps winning. And I'm guessing there's going to be much more to come with Angelina down the line.
Yeah, she was only my winner pick because she was friends with Adam Klein. So without knowing much about the cast, I was like, that's good enough for me. A low bar to become my winner pick. But I've been impressed by what we've seen from her so far. I don't think we've seen any issues. I wasn't thrilled with how she handled the Natalie thing, where Natalie was like, you know, confronting her about not being a threat, which, again, smart by Natalie to play up that she's not a threat because she's old and whatever. Like, she has some good instincts. I didn't love how Angelina was like, there's just no numbers to flip it, because it's such a cop out thing, especially I think Angelina probably presents herself as being connected and being a player. And so when you act like you have no agency, I think people, that comes across as pretty disingenuous. But I think that she does have enough connections with John, with this six person alliance, that she has the ability. I could see her becoming a pretty big swing vote on the tribe or on another tribe down the line, just because of how skilled she is. I really hope that we're not going to be robbed of her potential with we don't see much of her, and then she's, the numbers flip on her. Maybe that's the scenario where Natalie flips things. I don't know. But but I agree with you that I'm excited about her potential in the season if she can just get the right outcomes going.
I'm certainly nervous about her getting rorked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good comparison on that front. That's the downside for her. The upside is that she really does go far and is a big player, because she's been low key, but certainly not as much as people like Natalia or Alec or even Allison, especially this episode.
I think she has, to restore the Colin Stone hyperbole back to its natural order, I would say Angelina as a player has non-Donald Trump fan Sarah Lucina upside.
I think she could be in there
really mixing it up and playing a really an aggressive and compelling game.
I don't think that was hyperbole.
Okay, good. Well, Sarah Lucina is like a very well-regarded Survivor winner at this point, and people get mad at me when I compare people after two episodes.
That's her upside, not her. That's not
Austin, you got to understand. Those are my words, but what people do is twist them so that they have their worst possible context and motivation to make it sound like I'm an idiot and that I'm grossly exaggerating everything.
Wow, always complaining about your edit.
Yeah, yeah, I get such a bad edit for a guy who edits his own show. All right, so do you have anything on Allison for this episode, or Natalia for this episode, or anyone else that I'm forgetting from the Goliath tribe, from the Alec, I guess, from this episode?
All Allison had was the blue wave was hitting her. That's all I had in my notes for Allison.
Okay.
So no, she seemed good in episode one, but I mean, who knows? Apparently she, according to Angelina, she's, who did she say? She's connected to, Alec. Oh, no, that's Natalia. I don't know. Natalia does not... Her only stories right now are that she knows about the idol that everybody knows about and that she hates Natalie. So I can't really support her for those reasons. And she could be a victim of something flipping or going awry. I don't know, but I have really nothing on them.
Okay. Well, Austin, we have a little more on the forecasting front coming once we hit the edit zone. But before we do that, it's time for a semi-regular segment that we debuted in one of the patron podcasts. We played this game with the Heroes versus Villains cast, and this is how it works. So, Austin, you'll be familiar with this, but for the regular audience, I have a friend named Anna, and she is a casual Survivor fan. Regular listeners will know her as Casual Anna, and from time to time, I will do what I consider scientific research, essentially, to find out what from Survivor sticks with the casuals as time goes on. And Austin, you, sir, are going to be the next contestant in the game that is now sweeping the nation. It is time for Casual Anna Thinks. That's right. And today, Austin, the season in question that you are going to be playing is Ghost Island. You are going to be guessing which of the Ghost Island cast Casual Anna, when given a photo of the cast, was able to come up with just based on sight alone. This is a season that ended a few months ago. Who does Anna remember by first? All we need is a first name. And Austin, actually, there's a twist this time where...
Oh, no.
No, there's a bonus round. So if she didn't get the name right away... the second round, I would give her the first letter of the name as like a hint. So you are going to be guessing, we'll go through the cast, whether Casual Anna recognized this person by first name, either right away, got the first letter, then got it, or never recognized this person. And this is the Ghost Oof. Island edition.
Oof, God.
Okay.
I felt much better about the Heroes versus Villains one, but the recency of the season, combined with the lack of legends, like, Dom set a very high bar for the Heroes versus Villains one. I am very, very concerned, and my track record on podcast games is not good, but I'm very honored to be part of this historic moment of the return of Casual Anna Thinks.
So
says I don't, what is,
casual
is
Anna thinks it's
okay,
it's a play cat, on Laden thinks, which is a famous like poker casino sitting around at the table killing time game. It's called Laden thinks. It's very fun and you should Google it. It's great for car rides. But this is Casual Anna Thinks. And so I sent her, I was going to send you this photo, Austin, but you're using your phone for this podcast. So it wouldn't work to see it at the same time. But it's easy.
You can message it to me.
Okay. So Austin, I have just sent you the cast photo, the same photo that I sent to Casual Anna, and we will go through from the top left to the bottom right. These are actually put in order and labeled the Malolo tribe and the Navidi tribe. So the top's going to be tough. These are a lot of the earlier boots, just FYI. But for the historical record, on Heroes versus Villains, I think Casual Anna got like 8 or 9 right. So she did a good job. And just as kind of some background on Casual Anna, so you have a bit of context entering this, her favorite players tend to be the physically, aesthetically pleasing people. Like, she would list Jenna Maraska as her favorite Survivor of all time, I think. So be aware of that. That may influence some of the people that she remembers.
Okay.
All right, so we begin in the top left corner here with the Malolo tribe with Brendan Shapiro. Did Anna remember Brendan?
Okay, so am I guessing right away about whether it's the person or that you gave them the first letter?
Yeah, you're going to go with either okay. Right away, first letter, or never.
Oh, God. Well, let me just first say that it just took me a solid – the whole time you were explaining that, I was trying to remember Jenna Bowman's name. So that's not a good sign that I'm also struggling. I'm going to say that God, I don't like this twist. I'm going to say she got Brendan on the first letter.
She got Brendan never.
Oh, God. Okay. It was clearly not on the first try. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, that is for sure.
I thought maybe she liked the physique, the dad. I don't know. Okay.
All right. Next item up for bids, Donathan.
Man, it's going to be rough if she does not get Donathan. I'm going to say that she got Donathan on the first try.
She submitted Dominic instead of Don. Did not get Jonathan.
Oh no.
Yeah. Next item, Jacob Derwin. How did she do here?
Oh man, I want to lean towards never at this point, but I feel like I'm gonna give it one more go and give her a little bit of faith and say that he's stand out enough, and like, it's a Jewish name, it can work. I'm gonna say she got it after the first letter.
Well, you don't know this, but Casual Anna is Jewish, and yeah. In the case of Jacob Derwin, her answer was no clue on Bob Ross.
No. Wait, when did you prompt about the letter? I don't understand.
And so we went through, and she got all the first names she could, and then we went through for the first letters of the one she hadn't gotten yet.
And so she still did not get it after
she
that.
She did not
it
get
still
it.
Was,
no.
Oh God. Okay, this is a rough start. Let's hope I can get one. Okay. All right. Next up.
Next up is James Lim.
I'm going to say she never got this.
That is correct.
Okay. All right. There we go.
Who is this, Austin? Who is this person?
It really took me way too long.
It's Jenna.
Thank you. I'm going to say she never got this one.
That is correct.
Yeah, that one was easy. Okay.
All right. So now here's one that could be a little more interesting. Laurel.
Laurel made the final three, big character. I'm going to give Casual Anna the credit that she got it that she got it after the letter.
Casual Anna got it immediately.
Wow. Okay. All right. Good for Casual Anna. I'm sorry for doubting you. I clearly should not. I had no reason to doubt you at this point.
Well, Malolo is tough. Malolo, a lot of these people were out early. Up next, we have Libby.
Okay. So Libby physically appealing, but that's tough. She was not a good presence. I'm going to say Casual Anna did not get Libby.
Casual Anna initially kept saying Abby, but knew it was wrong. She got Libby after the L.
Oh God.
It's okay.
This is tough.
She blew my mind with that one. I couldn't believe she got Libby.
I know. I feel like I should get a half point if she
how do we think she did on Michael Yerger?
She had to get Michael. I'm gonna say she got him on the first try.
You know Casual Anna well. She did. Yeah. I would guess Michael was her favorite player.
I think so. Yeah.
How about Gonzalez?
No chance.
How about Stephanie Johnson?
I'm gonna say she got it on the first letter.
Actually, I need to double check this. She definitely got it. She got Stephanie Johnson right away. She didn't even need the first letter. Her explanation was that she remembered her pants, her running pants, her yoga pants or whatever.
That's the least memorable thing about Stephanie Johnson. How did she latch on to that?
Don't ask me how Casual Anna does these things, but she remembered Stephanie right. Johnson right away.
I don't mind. I don't mind. What am I at? 2 points? Three. I'm at three.
I think you're at three. Yeah. Okay, yeah. We move on to Navidi. Let's see how this one goes. Okay. We have a photo of Angela, although it is Angela with her hair down, not pulled back, very much not looking like Angela.
Yeah, this is. I immediately thought, "Oof, is that Angela's daughter? Like, yeah. did she slip onto the season?" Okay, so she definitely did not get it on the first try. Angela went to the final four. If you give her the A, how many other A names are there? I'm going to say she got it on the first letter.
She did not get it on the first letter.
Oh,
although
my
you
God.
just reminded me when in the case, I forgot to include this. In the case of Jenna, she technically got it by just guessing after I told her it was Jay. She's like, I don't know, Jenna. It just happened to be right.
Oh, that's not fair.
No, I'm not counting that. That doesn't count.
Okay.
At all.
All right.
How about Bradley?
I'm going to say she did not get Bradley.
She did not get Bradley, although once she was given the first letters, she swapped. She called Brendan Brad, and she called Bradley Brendan.
That's what I actually just envisioned happening, that she called him Brendan. I should have said that, yeah.
Well, I would have given you credit for that.
Yeah. Okay.
Chelsea is next.
Okay. Oh, God. Please don't let her get Chelsea. I can't believe she knows Chelsea and not some other people. I'm going to say she does not get Chelsea.
Okay, well, I stepped on it a little bit, but she does not. Yeah. You still get points. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I invalidated that question. You received no credit for
God, this is a brutal, brutal quizzer.
All right, how about the Noble one, Chris Noble?
I think she got him on the first try.
You are correct. She did remember Chris Noble. How about Desiree?
Okay, I'm gaining steam. Not on the first try for Desiree. I'm going to say she did not get Desiree.
She got Desiree on the first try.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Look at her. How about...
Did she say how she remembered her?
No. She did. I have no idea how, but she did. Okay. Maybe she's one of the people she deemed one of the hottest in the cast. I don't know. That seems to be the way she does it. How about our runner-up, Dominic Abate?
All right. Well, I would initially say that she must have gotten it, but the fact that she called Donathan Dominic is a little bit concerning for the fact that I don't know if she's willing to say that there are two Dominics. Oh, man. Maybe she thought that Dom and Dominic were different names, so I'm going to say that she got it on the first try.
She got it after she was given the D.
Phrasing on that. Come on, Anna.
But she eventually got Dominic. And for the record, this was done. I was initially going to play this game with Dom during our premiere podcast, and so this was before Dominic was on the podcast. She would definitely know Dominic now. She liked him on the podcast last week.
Oh, I can't wait for the Survivor Maryland version of Casual Things.
How about our next item up for bids, Kellen?
Okay. It's an unusual name. I don't think she got it on the first try. I'm debating on whether she got it with the K or not. If you get K, she might have said Karen, Kendall. I'm going to say she did not get Kellen. That might be it's a little risky.
In the case of Kellen, Casual Anna got it right away.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. So Kellen made an impact. Good for Casual Anna. Okay.
How about Morgan Rickey?
I'm going to say no chance.
That is the correct answer there. How about Seabass?
Ooh. He stands out enough physically. I'm going to say she got on the first try.
You are correct. And that leaves only our eventual winner, Wendell Holland.
Ooh, this is a tough one. She's got to know Wendell. I'm going to say she got on the first try.
In the case of Wendell Holland, Casual Anna did not know it on the first try.
Oh,
she got it after the W. She got Wendell. She was very mad at herself. She knew he won, and she was mad that she didn't get it right, but she got it after the W.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, no.
Yeah, and there you go, Austin. There is the Ghost Island edition of Casual Anna Thinks. Job well done. This is a minefield of a cast. Like, the people she knew that I was expecting her not to know blew my, like, to know Stephanie Johnson and Desiree and not know Dominic.
Yeah, that's a tough look for Casual Anna. But, yeah, I mean, I probably should have had less, I don't know. I'll take what I got. I should have given her more credit with Laurel, I think, but, how could I even do that, though, when she didn't get Wendell? So never mind. I take it back. I don't have any issues with my guesses.
Your guesses were as good as anyone's could have been there, Austin. Before we – job very well done.
You should play this game with Dom before he hears the podcast and see what he gets.
Oh, that's a good idea. I should have done that before we recorded the podcast, and then I could have the results right here in front of me to end the suspense.
That's okay. Well, next time.
Not all of us are game show hosts, Austin, all right?
That's right.
Okay. Before we hit the edit zone, I know some people tune out. Please, Austin, let people know where they can find you and find Survivor Maryland.
Yes. Well, you can find me on Twitter at Austin Tatius with two S's. It's my name. So AustinTatiouss. We were actually reading the tweets in New York of the Austin Tatius with one S, and they're not good. And there have only been three of them in like 20 years. So that's unfortunate, but there I am. I tweet about non-Survivor things now, except they never get any traction. So I just end up mostly tweeting about Survivor things. You can find Survivor Maryland on YouTube. The channel is Survivor Maryland, so it should be easy to find. There's not another one. And I would recommend the thing I say right away is if you're confused as to what it is, I mean, it's Survivor. It's just on a college campus. I think most people who listen to your show should know this at this point. But if you still have not given it a shot, if you're on the fence, go watch the premiere of All Stars that's in the link or pinned to my Twitter. If you want to go all in and go from the start, then watch Maryland Outback. That's the second season. So Certainly, if you do end up watching it, or if you have and never reached out, then let me know. It's nice to hear feedback and whatever. And I certainly feel validated with all the years that I put in. It was a really great run. But, you know, you kind of fall off a cliff after that and everybody forgets about it. So if you have... If you give it a shot at any point, certainly reach out and let me know. It's appreciated. So
yeah, and again, just from me, and I know Dom is on board with this as well, cannot and will never stop saying enough good things about Survivor Maryland. So get on board now so you know what I'm talking about for however many years this keeps going. All right.
Right.
Austin, let's hit the edit zone.
All right.
Okay, and then I'll drop in the edit zone bumper there, and then we'll pick it up. And we can keep this quick, I assume.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So here we are in the edit zone. And Austin, I know we've talked during the general kind of conversation about long-term prospects for a lot of people. Who is your number one contender right now?
Well, this is, first of all, thank you for bringing me into the zone. I hadn't been here before, so I'm feeling a little pressure, feeling nervous. It's like a different experience. But I had not given a ton of thought to my winner rankings. And I've been trying to like convince myself to not do that so that I don't like ruin the season for myself. But there's so many people who are in contention at this point that I'm not worried about it.
Right. On my list of people that I have as contenders, I think I have 9 names at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't feel strongly about any of them.
I mean, in terms of my pick, I'm standing by my Angelina pick just so I can be right. But I wouldn't put her as the number one in terms of like edit equity. Why don't you start off? Because I'm going to have to process this a little bit.
I would say my pretty clear top three would be Elizabeth, Gabby, and Christian in some order. Although I frankly think Davey and Lyrsa and Nick also have equity over on that David tribe to be potential winners there. And I think we did expand in decent enough detail about why we believe in each of those people individually. And I think all of them, as we go forward, are going to be interesting people to track and see how all of these different kind of possible winner edits start to shape up. But actually, let's start with one thing that we teased during the general conversation that I don't want to then forget to bring up once we're actually here. Let's talk about that idea of Lyrsandra. You know, as I alluded to, I think she's in, literally I have in my notes, I say the Sandra / Cerise / like lunch lady Denise camp, where once you make the merge, and when you're in that kind of mold, you are never going anywhere until at least like final 6, final 5, somewhere in there. That you will never be viewed as the most pressing threat. And the take that I was going to unleash, and I'm glad that you kind of warmed people up to this already, is I think that Sandra comparison in particular could be really apt with her willingness to speak her mind, but also her ability to shut her mouth that I frankly don't think Sandra has in nearly as many spots as people want to give her credit for. And here is the barrel fire Colin Stone take to end all Colin Stone takes through 2 episodes. And I'm very willing to take this off the table. He can feel it coming, kids. Everyone at home knows what's about to happen. It's fine. Give me Lyrsa over Sandra Diaz-Twine. If I had to bet my life on someone to win a season of Survivor, I would take Lyrsa over Sandra.
Wow.
I'm saying it. I'm putting it out there. I think Lyrsa is a very similar kind of player with much more control and much more likability.
I think you're underselling Sandra's likability, but wow. I feel like I don't even want to speak to this because I don't want to get caught in the crosshairs of this. Like, it's better for me to stay out, to shut my mouth, and to let that take play out as it will.
Okay, that's understandable. I don't – listen, this is what you get when you step into the edit zone.
Because I do think Lyrsa is very good.
You come into the edit zone. You got to be ready to handle whatever takes start flying around.
I thought I was, but I'm not sure anymore.
I'm throwing you into the deep end of the edit zone.
I didn't pass my swim test of the edit zone.
Okay, well, I'm putting that out there. That I'm not saying – look, I'm obviously not saying Lyrsa has a more impressive Survivor resume than Sandra, but I would say Lyrsa, through these 2 episodes, has demonstrated to me – more things that would make me optimistic as a Survivor investor than Sandra did in her first two seasons combined, frankly. So it hadn't been long enough since we've been, you know, the Heroes versus Villains podcast have been too much season of positivity. We got to get this out during the general podcast where we can really let this go. But so there's where I stand on Lyrsa, and I'm really interested in seeing where that goes. But let's get into, I know Elizabeth seems to be most people's number one from what I can tell at this point. And I'm guessing that's not nonsense to you by any stretch.
It's not nonsense at all. She's clearly good and she's clearly gotten focus. I would need to go back. I didn't rewatch the premiere and I don't remember how she was sort of set up at first. If we got a presentation of her as a character in any way directly from her, or if it was just Lyrsa saying that she's this cowgirl, I'm this lesbian, whatever. You know, did we get any major setup from Elizabeth about herself?
I don't know about like her background, but we certainly got to know who she was. Like, as we certainly, like, I think Elizabeth has the benefit of wearing that cowboy hat and becoming, it's easy to quickly become familiar with her when you see her on the screen.
Right, right. And we can certainly get that in episodes to come. I'm not worried about her. I think she has that potential, but I don't know. If you were just going off of edit, I think I'd be higher on someone like Nick, and I don't know why. Maybe it's because he's the only one who's really gotten like a winner quote in the traditional sense so far. So I think I'd be higher on him than someone like Elizabeth, but I think that there's been enough strengths that if we get that more personal stuff from her, then I would be very willing to jump on board the Elizabeth train.
Right. That list that I just gave, like, I have Elizabeth, Christian, Gabby, Lyrsa, and Davey in no particular order from the Dave and Nick from the David tribe. And I think they are all absolutely in there with a shot. And I don't think I would have any of them as a substantial favorite over anyone else from that list. Like, I don't think any one person stands out that much. And then from the Goliath tribe, I would say Jeremy's been looking really good to me based on the overtly kind of visible, more visible people. And I'm with you on the Angelina pick. Like, if I were to have a candidate that is getting more of like the Sarah Lucina treatment of her team wins the early challenges, so she's not as visible, but what she is therefore looks really good, Angelina for me would be the easy number one contender in that respect.
Yeah. I think it would be deliciously, I don't know what I just said. Just very ironic if a Goliath wins the season just because of how it's being set up and even the first reward challenge. Like, you know, they wanted David to win. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we should rule out the Goliaths at all. It's just hard to tell. Like you said with Sarah Lucina, if the tribe is winning early, it's going to be hard to pick out those people early on. I think enough of them, you can't rule out John, Angelina, Mike, Jeremy, definitely. They all definitely like have real shots to me.
Natalie? Does Natalie have a chance to be the Davidiest Goliath?
I'm gonna say yes, because of I want there to be a chance. So yes,
I'm gonna say
quite a season.
I'm unfortunately gonna say no on that, just because as much as I stand Nat Queen Cole, I do not know if Jeff Probst and the storytelling department have it in them to make someone look that socially unaware early that goes on to win.
They don't. Only I would have that potential.
Yes, exactly.
That's right.
Right.
I'm worried about the Davids breaking up because, I mean, I know we didn't talk about this in the main part, but Dominic Abate talked about last week with how close that they were getting and how that could be a real problem for when they end up breaking up. And it happened right away. And I don't know. Do you think there's going to be a swap next episode?
I do not think there's going to be a swap next episode. And furthermore, one thing I put out there, just, I remember, I think it must have been in our Ghost Island season finale podcast, I saw the tribe flags and like the promo for, hey, stay tuned, coming this fall is Survivor 37. And I saw the tribe flag just said Goliath. And so I thought, oh, are they potentially not going to swap them? Is this like Heroes and Villains treatment where they're naming the tribe that because it's not going to be a swap? And I would still probably take the over on 0.5 swaps, but I would take the under on 1.5 swaps.
That's interesting. I think I'd still take the over. I wouldn't read into that because I think it's a different time. And I think that it actually naming them early means that they can give those sort of standard tribe names early on if they swap. So I think that actually might be more reason why we can expect the swap. I thought it was interesting edit-wise that they showed Christian and maybe a couple other people saying, oh, we're not anticipating a swap anytime soon. So that made me think that it was actually possibly impending.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I will go back to what you said about your top three, and I think Gabby is definitely in the mix in terms of somebody that Survivor is very willing to not show if they're not important. She's not Chelsea. She's interesting. She gives interesting confessionals, especially when she's like crying. So they always want to show that. But I don't want to boil her down to that. She is. It's a stressful game. I like Gabby, and I think that we've talked about the different outcomes that her game can take, and the edit definitely has presented her as very relevant enough to be a contender. I think I actually might put her as my number one edit-wise.
Yeah, I mean, she was my number one last week. She's certainly no lower than number three for me, and I would probably say no lower than number two. I would have a hard time at this point thinking that Christian would be above Gabby for me. I feel like so much of their content has gone hand in hand and hers has looked slightly better, that I would say Elizabeth would probably be the only one that I would hear arguments for my own rankings at this point to be above Gabby. And I'm with you on that same kind of point that you just brought up, and essentially like the entire crux of the co-wrong edit debate was they would be so willing to cast Michelle and Gabby aside if they weren't almost forced to make them prominent characters. And Gabby, I want to be clear, I don't want to boil her down to like someone who's just crying either. Like, as I said last week, I think Gabby is literally the number one funniest Survivor of all time on Twitter. I think her tweets are funnier than anyone we have ever seen come along from Survivor. And so to see that part of her personality not really coming out on the show is a little intriguing to me. So that's going to be interesting. And I definitely think she's got to be, if not number one, very close to that.
And I'm sure she is being funny out there. I'm sure a lot of her moments are just, it's the edit. And, right. And that's a big, we're seeing her as in a strategic role early on, and that doesn't leave as much room for humor. Although I think we get it in her relationship with Christian for sure. We haven't really talked about Carl at all.
Oh, and yeah.
I think that Carl, depending on how the next episode goes, I think he has a shot. You know, one thing I didn't love is that he was like so big on challenge strength and we need a strong tribe. But we have been presented that the Davids are pretty weak. I don't think it's an invalid opinion in this case. And he also showed in the premiere that he cares about alliance building and making connections. So I think that there is a good shot for him if he can bounce back next week.
Yeah, I really thought Carl had a good premiere and then just a pretty lackluster second episode here for me. It seemed like all we really saw was him being wrong about the way things were playing out, essentially. But I'm definitely with you that Carl could continue to be an interesting candidate, particularly in the timelines where we swap relatively soon. So, yeah, definitely. As we talked about when we were hanging the Dunn chain around B and potentially Alec and maybe even one other person, there are frankly to me just maybe two or three people that I would say are drawing dead out of the remaining cast. And I don't think I would give anyone out of the top contenders that we have anything even close to like 25% equity. I think it's still a total toss up among a dozen people.
For sure. There's a lot to show. I think I'd rule out B. I'd rule out Dan, Natalia, and Alec. And I think that's all I'd rule out at this point.
I think I'm with that. Yeah. And I don't even know who would be on my like watch list for who could be ruled out next week unless they get really negative content or obviously get voted out. I feel like they're doing a good job setting up a lot of different storylines. Like, again, like 10, 11, 12, 13 storylines could conceivably be finalists.
Yeah.
All right. Austin, thank you so much for joining us. He is, of course, once again on Twitter at Austintatious with two S's. Anything else you want to get out there before we close up?
I do not. Thank you for having me on again. It is always a pleasure. I hope that I was a bonus Dom as much as possible. I'm much like a bonus Scally. Did you read that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
But thanks again. I look forward to the Maryland stuff and, of course, all the normal Survivor coverage as well.
Yeah, we will be talking to you very soon, I'm sure. Until then, I am at Colin Stone on Twitter. Dom is at DomHRV. Email the show, domandcolin@gmail.com. And, of course, weekly bonus episodes covering old CBS reality seasons. Right now in the middle of Heroes versus Villains, about to hit The Merge, already 20 hours deep on those podcasts. If you want in there, patreon.com/DomandColin is where you go. We will talk to you guys next week, I'm sure. Take care, everybody.